PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here today with my good friend and yours, Mr. Anthony Bongiorno.
Hello, everyone.
Spell our names the same way.
We do. Same exact. Do you don't have a U?
No.
You're not BU?
No.
Oh.
I feel like maybe if the U were still in there, people would pronounce it better on the phone.
I always get like Bongiorno.
Yeah, Bongiorno seems to be a real big one.
Yeah.
But you know,
how do you say it?
The minute you asked me that, I lost all everything in my brain. Buongiorno.
Okay, I also say
like B-U-N.
I say Buongiorno too.
Buongiorno.
But we have family members who say Buongiorno and correct people who say Buongiorno.
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 If anything, the more correct thing would be buon.
It buon. Yes. But that's with U-O.
Buon. Yeah.
B-U-O-N.
All right. This couldn't be less interesting, everyone. I'm here with Anthony. He is my brother. We are here to... This is PCMC. If you haven't listened before, welcome. This is episode 399.
You got a lot of catching up to do.
You fucking... You know what's funny? I was talking to somebody once who was like... I was someone at work, and they were like, I'd love to listen to your podcast. I was like, yeah, sure. I just did an episode on whatever the fuck. And she's like, no, I'm going to start from episode one. I was like, it's not a Netflix show.
No, don't do that.
Not that I have any problem with episode one, but like, there's no need.
No, you don't have a problem
with
it. You
cherry pick.
It was an entirely different show for the first... Not entirely different, but it was different.
Well,
different.
Emilio was... it was a real two-hander with me and Emilio. And we had very different vibes.
What was that? The first 50 episodes?
Or something. I think 50.
The first time I was ever on was as a guest of you and Emilio.
Yes. Yeah, it definitely was 50 because it was like we decided to do it differently, like around a Halloween episode. Mm. And the first episode would have been a Halloween episode.
And they were all fullies back then.
Yes. Although, yeah, they were all fullies. But then when we did topics, we would call them minis. And sometimes they were really short.
Yeah.
And then they just became topic episodes. And, you know, it's... It's deep and rich. I am proud of every single episode. It's just, there's no need to do it in order.
No.
That's crazy.
No. Go through and listen to episodes about things you like.
Yeah, that's how I do it.
Yeah.
Isn't that how you do it when you find a new podcast?
Things I like or guests that I like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, today's topic is our favorite?
Question mark.
Can't be best, right?
No, I envision this as dream sequences that we find intriguing, interesting.
Ah.
That's how I was thinking.
Alluring. Perchance to dream.
Dream sequences that from films that have stayed with you for some reason.
So I've been thinking about this all week, and I've got a lot of just random thoughts.
Okay.
Everything else we'd call scene. That's a sex scene. That's an action scene.
This is a sequence.
This is the only thing people call sequences. No one says dream scene.
Mm.
We say dream sequence. That's weird. Also, the more I would think about this concept, it would become more malleable. It would lose its you know, concreteness.
Got slippery there.
Yeah, because not to sound too hippy dippy right out of the gate, but like, what movies are dreams? What's the difference? They're fake realities where things don't make sense, but you think they make sense because you get the impression of it making sense in the moment.
Yeah, I had that thought too, because you're talking about a fantasy within a fantasy, really?
Right.
And then I was like, oh, Inception? I've never seen Inception. I feel like...
Yeah, I've seen Inception a few times, but those dreams are very... to me, Inception is really very deliberately about film because the different dreams in that movie are like different genres.
Mm-hmm.
There's like an action dream and a James Bond dream.
Yeah. Well, I'll say right up at the top here that my list is not. It's kind of
good.
It's
not good.
It's not great. No. This list is very eclectic. It's not like I'm looking for. Or was looking for the five most realistic dream sequences.
Yeah.
Some are very unrealistic.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, no, I wasn't doing realistic either.
I was just thinking, some of them are, You know, I guess they'll we'll wait till we get there. But this is all to say that we're building the plane as we're flying it right now.
As we say in every list episode of PCMC, we could write you a different list tomorrow.
It'll change.
We're just here to talk about shit.
Yeah.
Do not hold our fucking feet to the fucking grindstone. Is that an expression?
Feet to the fire.
Feet to the fire.
Axe to the grind.
Axe to the grindstone.
You combine two.
About this. I got a question for you.
Or is it nose to the grindstone?
I don't know.
And an axe to grind.
An axe to grind.
Jesus, we combined three of them.
Yeah, and my wife is a battle axe.
Oh, boy. I thought you were going to say my wife is a bitch.
My wife is a
bitch. For no reason.
Random.
I don't have a wife.
Did you have a hard time not making it all horror? Because I found as I was thinking about dreams, even forgetting a Nightmare on Elm Street movies, there's so many, because dreams, I think, give you an opportunity to be really scary. Mm. So I found like a lot of my choices were like horror. And as of now, my list of five, we have five each mm-hmm. and honorable mentions, of course. Mm-hmm. I have three out of five are horror movies.
Okay, I have two out of five are horror.
One out of my five. We can question if it is a dream or not.
Okay.
But that's part of the fun.
Okay, it is.
Do you want to start? Do you want me to start? Who wants to start?
I'll start. My first one is the dream sequence from A Christmas Story.
Okay.
Where Ralphie is... I shouldn't say a dream sequence from A Christmas Story, because I think there are a few dreams.
But there's also imagination, daydreams.
And there's
sequences.
Daydreams. That's another question I had, was do daydreams count?
I mean,
and I want to say yes.
Let's
play it fast and loose, baby.
I mean, I find myself asking, do drug trips count?
Yeah.
Like when you see someone high in a movie and something
like The Big Lebowski?
Yes.
Yeah. I would say, yeah. So this is the one I'm thinking of is when he imagines life as an old, as a blind person.
Yeah,
and he's like, so he walks into his house and he's wearing, you know, he's blind. He has a
walking stick. But why did he get blind?
I'm getting there. Right. Okay, so he has a walking stick. He's wearing the sunglasses and they're like, oh, Ralphie. Oh, like it's such a tragedy. Yeah. The music really sad. And then they're like, what caused this? How did this happen? And then he says it was soap poisoning. And it's because.
And you hear whatever that old tune.
Because he said a bad word and his mother punished him by putting soap in his mouth. So it's a revenge dream.
And I think that's very childlike.
Childlike.
I remember being
they'll get
like,
their comeuppance.
They're going to regret what they did.
It was soap poisoning. He becomes British for no reason.
And the way
soap
the mother
poisoning.
Goes, oh.
It's
good. It's so funny. Yeah, that's a really good one.
That's why I like it. It's also like, you get the sense that he's playing an adult version of himself, but he's still a child.
Right.
It's still him as a
child. Yeah.
Everybody's the same age.
And his parents are the same age as well. Like, there's no... And they don't know he's blind before this. He just shows up and he's like, son, what's going on? Yeah.
How did this happen? It's so good.
It was? That's really good.
You know, I want to say for the record...
Uh-huh.
We're a Christmas Story family long before everyone else jumped on the bandwagon.
That's right. We watched it on VHS and we watched it once. How about that? We didn't need to watch it all day.
we watched it like once a year.
Yeah.
But once.
Yeah.
And nobody knew what it was. I remember people not knowing what I was talking about when I said I love a Christmas Story.
And now we're all on board.
You know what? And now I don't want it.
You and Dad also sat in an empty August theater or July theater watching Hocus Pocus. Which was a huge failure when it came out. It was just you, me, and Dad.
Why in the world did it come out in the summer?
Because they had no faith in it. And now it's like the most classic Halloween movie.
I do remember
I remember being in an empty fucking theater. I just remember being in basically empty theater seeing the Brady Bunch movie and Mom falling asleep.
Oh, yeah. Because we went on like a Tuesday night at 8 o'clock or something.
Yeah.
It was a great movie. God, what a great movie that is.
It is a great movie.
All right. So that's mine. I feel like there's a dream sequence in that, too. There are dream sequences in a lot of movies.
That was really bending my brain because I had a hard time getting to five. And I found myself going like, what movies have dream sequences?
A lot.
And then I was like, then I tried to think about TV. I don't have any TV on here.
But Saved by the Bell had quite a...
I almost thought of a Saved by the Bell one.
Quite a few with the pink border.
Yeah.
The pink fuzzy border.
I also considered one of the Sopranos dreams because Sopranos is famous for having really good dream sequences.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But they're almost famous, I think, for having like quote unquote realistic dream sequences because they'd be super bizarre.
Uh-huh. Oh, the one right in the first season where like they're... in the butcher shop and there's like dead bodies and hanging in the back.
Or the one, I was thinking about the one where he sees like the fish at the fish market and one of them is Big Pussy.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, I'm working with the feds, Tone.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, I don't say it. Like it's him dealing with, like he realizing Pussy was the rat, but he knows it, but he can't deal with it. He's coming to terms with it in his subconscious.
Yeah. Well, then isn't there also like an arc throughout a season where Tony sees a woman who's not real?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
He like sees a woman who's like a neighbor or something.
Oh, I don't remember.
Throughout a few episodes, and like she's very attractive. And then it's like person's not real. Yeah, I vaguely remember that. It's been a little while since I've seen The Sopranos, but
have you ever seen. Not that we're talking about Sopranos, but have you ever seen after Pussy dies, there's a scene where you can find on YouTube easily, like Tony closes a door and there's a mirror and you could see Pussy. They had the actor just stand there for an Easter egg. You could clearly see Pussy just standing there.
That's kind of scary.
No, it's very scary. It's very scary. At the time people didn't like it and now people like this aspect more. I love the supernatural weirdness of, you know, The Sopranos. Like a lot of people don't like the movie and they're like, oh, it's so stupid. Christopher is narrating it from hell. And it's like, hey, that's fine.
That movie is bad.
There's definitely heaven and hell in that. Remember the psychic? Remember the psychic?
Yeah. I was just going to say that's like a legitimate storyline where like the psychic is right.
Yeah. Yeah.
About the fact that there are like all these, I mean, the psychic says, like, there are all these souls here who are angry at you for killing them.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And then he calls him the F word and he throws a chair or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, okay, so I haven't even done one yet. So let me do one. This is one that is, in fact, one shot.
Huh.
It's one shot, but it's a very famous shot. It is from the 1979 horror classic Phantasm. Have you ever seen Phantasm?
No, I have not.
It's the ball that flies and it's got like spikes come out of it and it goes into your head and it's like it all takes place in like a funeral home or whatever.
Yeah, who is it?
Oh, it's directed by Don. Oh, what's his name? The same guy who did Bubba Hotep. By the way, I've seen it twice. One being like just a few months ago, and I can't totally tell you what it's about. Yeah, it's funny that because like it gets mentioned with like all those other classic 70s and 80s horror movies, but it's truly surreal and obtuse. It's directed by Don Coscarelli.
Okay.
All right, so there's a kid, there's a little kid character in it who's like, I guess the protagonist. And he keeps like sneaking into this funeral home or funeral parlor that's like in town because there's like some alien shit going on. I don't know. I really don't know. And there's like the character that we call the tall man, who's just, he's like the guy who works at the funeral parlor. He's like super, super tall. He has like a pale face. He's dressed in a suit, right? So the shot is we see one shot of the kid's like in bed, he's sleeping. And then we see a close-up of the kid sleeping in bed, and then it zooms out, and we see he's not in his bedroom. His bed is in a cemetery, and the tall man is above him and, like, crouches over him. And then from the ground on either side of the bed, bodies jump up and grab at him.
Ooh.
So it's a jump scare, and it's one shot, but it's definitely the most famous image from the movie. And you've probably seen it at some point. Yeah, it's very scary. It's also endemic of the movie because it's just interesting visuals more than there's a story here.
Yeah.
And it's beautifully orchestrated from the close-up, and then you pull back, and then the one guy moves, and then from either side of the bed, these grabbed the kid. And it's also like, I remember being a kid and having dreams where my bed was involved in the dream.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like I love that idea of like a bed. I think Eternal Sunshine does this too.
Yeah.
Like the bed ends up somewhere.
Yeah. If we're going to start talking about dreams, I'm really boring people.
Yeah.
I had a dream. When we were just mere children,
yeah,
we slept in bunk beds, if you remember.
Yeah.
And our mom would wake us up in the morning for school. And she would always scream at me when it was my turn to get up. She'd scream, "Get down."
Yeah.
Because I was on the
top
bunk.
She was also a big James Brown fan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
399.
LOL. I remember having a dream that there was like a bomb threat in my school. And then all of a sudden, like, everybody screamed, like, "Get down!" And like, wow. In my dream, I crouched, and then I was in my bed crouching.
Wow.
And it was just mom saying, screaming, "Get down."
Some of it is so like you're just an animal where loud things scare you.
Yeah.
So many of my like jump scare nightmares were just somebody yelling out of nowhere. Uh-huh. And being like, ah. Like I had we're doing it. I had one where
let's do it.
I'm walking and dad's walking in front of me and he's just talking to me and then he turns around and goes, "Oh my God!" And then a car hits me and then I woke up.
Oh God.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
Anyway. by the way, I don't want to spoil it if you have Eternal Sunshine on your
list. I do
have
Eternal Sunshine. Okay, all right. Do you have it on your
list? I don't because I thought it didn't count. Because it's not a dream. It's them in his memory, kind of.
See, I thought it counted.
I mean, there's no rules. This is a stupid podcast. Yeah. No one cares about
it. Yeah, that's true. okay, my next one is from Rosemary's Baby.
Ooh, this one I almost did.
Okay, so this is...
But as she famously says...
This is no dream. This is really happening. So she is experiencing what we were just talking about. Which is a dream-like state when you are half awake.
And she's drugged in
the
moose.
She's drugged. Yeah,
the chocolate mouse.
Yeah. So she is experiencing things, and I've read the book many times. The Roman Polanski film, I guess it's... No, it's not the only version of Rosemary's Baby.
And you were telling me off the air that you feel like he got a bad rap.
Yeah, I did say that. No, I'm kidding. Please don't say that.
I'm just Jimmy Flick.
Yeah, you are. In the Roman Polanski Rosemary's Baby, like it is famously very, very faithful to the book, like very faithful, like even the dialogue, everything. It's like you read the book, it's like you're watching the movie.
Interesting.
So the dream sequence is almost like exactly what's described in the book too. So it's in reality, we learn at the end that she is being carried after being drugged through a secret doorway that connects their apartment to the neighbor's apartment. Because once upon a time, it was one big apartment.
Yeah.
And then the satanic cult rapes her.
Right. But there is dream stuff happening.
Right.
Because she sees the devil rape her.
But this is what I'm saying, right? Yeah. So that is what she's experiencing.
In reality.
In reality. But in her dream, it is she... There's partially her being carried, but then she's on a boat with JFK.
I totally forgot about that part.
And then she's naked all of a sudden. Like, she's wearing clothes, then all of a sudden she, like, puts her hands to her chest, and then when she moves her hands, she's naked, which shows that, like, they've taken her clothes off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She passes a burning church, which we later find out is... In the Castevet's apartment, there's a painting of a burning church.
Yeah.
And then
there is
she is lying there and she's surrounded by naked elderly people.
Gross.
And then the devil himself is raping her.
Yeah.
But then he has the eyes of her husband.
But aren't they like yellowy or something?
They are, but it's John Cassavetes' face with contacts. So we're to believe that he has sex with her as part of this ritual, but it's the devil possesses him to impregnate her. Okay. But in the dream, she's being raped by like a big scary devil figure.
It's super great. Editing, mise-en-scène.
There's a part, if you watch it and you're paying attention, where you see like the camera keeps going back and forth between like visuals of other things and being her eyes. Yeah. And there's a part where you see shelves come up into the frame, which is her being carried under the shelves of the closet into the next apartment. Because it's the it's the paper that she mentions earlier that she's going to put on the shelves in the closet.
Wow, yeah.
It's a really good... effective, really scary dream
sequence.
Yeah,
it's a really good one. That's a really good one. Yeah, that totally counts. That totally counts. Yeah. You know, it's funny. The Stepford Wives movie is also very faithful. I wonder if it's because he wrote such short books. Right? Aren't his books pretty short? Actually, I read Stepford Wives in a day.
The Stepford Wives movie actually adds a bit to it.
Does it really?
It's faithful, but it adds some additional scenes and stuff.
I don't remember. I don't remember. It's been a while since I read it. Or saw it.
It's amazing that those two films that are like two feminist horror classics are both written by the same guy.
I know, right? Now you couldn't do that.
No.
Not, and I'm not bemoaning it. I'm just saying you
because of woke.
You
were saying off mic.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get this one out of the way, cuz I feel like this is one that's always talked about, at least in horror movie circles. The American Werewolf in London dream.
Huh. I've never seen that film.
Okay. So what do you know about American Werewolf in London?
It's a song.
No, that's where that's
Werewolves of London. I know nothing about it.
Well, I bet you know it's a werewolf movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay, I know that.
Okay, so this is like the scariest part of the movie, and it's a dream. It has, and there's not even werewolves in it. It's he's been bitten, and he's becoming a werewolf, and he's having crazy dreams, like as his subconscious is dealing with this. So, but what's interesting is. And this is another thing I thought about with this whole list is some movies tell you in the beginning of the dream sequence is a dream sequence. Some movies tell you at the end of the dream sequence is a dream sequence. Point. And sometimes they never tell you it's a dream sequence.
Great point.
This is one where it's the end because they want to fool you. You think it's like a flashback because we've met the lead character. He was taking a trip with his best friend and they get attacked by a werewolf on the moors and now he's in a hospital.
Okay.
But then we see him, the main character, David, and he's like at home. It's a middle class, really comfy, cozy house. There's a dad with gray hair, like reading a paper on the chair. There's two kids like sitting in front of the TV and a big shag carpet watching The Muppet Show. And the episode of Muppet Show is Kermit and Piggy are watching a Punch and Judy show. And they're talking about violence, but it's The Muppet Show. And mom's in the kitchen cutting something, making food, and the main character is like doing homework on the like dining room table. So you feel like, so when you're watching, you're like, oh, this is a flashback, right? So everything's comfy and cozy, right? And then there's knock on a door, knock, knock, knock. And then the father's like, and the mom's like, will somebody get that? And the father's like, okay, I'll get it. And they keep knocking. He's like, okay, hold your horses. He opens the door. And there are monsters dressed as SS soldiers from World War II.
Oh, I think I've seen this.
And they have machine guns. And the editing becomes super, super rapid. And they shoot the father, mow him down. A monster, another monster dressed like a Nazi, comes up behind David, holds him by his hair, and puts a knife to his neck to make him watch. The mother is shot with a machine gun. And you actually see her like fly away. Everyone's screaming. It's such a, like, I can't, you have to see it because this, what I'm describing takes place in like 30 seconds and it's so, it's all just this rapid editing. One Nazi kicks the TV in and the little kids start screaming. They get mowed down. You don't see them get shot, but you obviously see that the Nazis shoot them. And then out of nowhere, they have like torches and they set the couches on fire and set the whole house on fire as David's being forced to watch. And then his throat is cut and then he wakes up and he's in the hospital. And the girl who's his love interest, who's the nurse that he meets, she's sitting next to him. And he's like, oh, I just had a nightmare. And she's like, oh, okay. Well, I know just the thing. And she goes to the to open the shades to get sun in. And there's a monster Nazi there who stabs her in the chest and starts screaming like an animal. And then he wakes up again and he goes, holy shit. And it's actually a big laugh in the movie because you've just been jump scared twice. And then he with you is reacting like, holy shit. And this is all a minute and 30 seconds, what I've just described. Huh. It's so fucking effective. And people have asked, like, what is, like, what's going on? And the director's like, well, he's a Jewish kid, so somewhere deep in his cultural consciousness is a fear of Nazis.
Yeah.
And he's becoming a werewolf, so something's going on in his subconscious. Because these are just like, they're just like, there's no better way to describe them than monsters. They just have weird monster faces.
What are they? They don't look...
One of them is kind of furry, but doesn't really look like the werewolf okay. that he becomes. And the others just look like, I don't know, like Hills Have Eyes people. Okay. Or like He-Man villains, like just weird monstery faces.
That's super interesting. I gotta see that.
It's, yeah, definitely. If you haven't seen any of these, definitely like watch them. They're so easy to find on YouTube. And it's that and the transformation scene are undoubtedly the two most famous scenes. Huh. But this is a very famous dream sequence. This will always come up on things. Especially because the quiet in the beginning of, like, it's so wholesome, it's so middle class, it's so cozy. You know, dad sitting in the chair, it's so Norman Rockwell. And then from that into just insane violence. Even, like, the Muppets. And then, like, yeah. it's just so good.
Wow. I gotta check that out. This is going to be quite a turn. My next one is the opening sequence of Bring It On.
I don't remember this
at all. I've seen Bring It On many, many times. It is one of my favorite films. It opens with a musical sequence of all of the cheerleaders, all the Toros, introducing themselves.
Oh!
It's the roll call.
Yes, wait, yes, I know this very much.
And
I swear I'm not a whore.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever seen the clip of what's her name? Ava from Hacks and what's the dude from SNL and Wicked?
Oh, Bowen Yang.
Yeah, like they're on a podcast and they start talking about it and then they sing the entire thing.
No, I've never seen that.
It's really good.
And I'm Big Red.
Yeah.
Okay, it's the announcement of Torrance.
Yeah.
As the new captain.
Uh-huh.
It's like roll call of all the cheerleaders and then announcing Kirsten Dunst Torrance as the new captain. And then she comes out for her like big debut and she's topless. Everybody in the gym sees her naked. And then you realize that this was her night before the first day of senior year, like stress dream because she's going to be captain for the first time.
Interesting. But it's also does a lot of narrative work.
Yes. What made me think of it is, first of all, it's always a joy to watch because it's funny. It's fun. It introduces the tone of the movie.
Yeah.
It introduces every single character by name.
Yeah.
It introduces the idea that like this is everything to this to being captain of this cheer team is this legacy team is everything for her and then I don't know, it's just it's also one of those ones where it's a fake out because the first time you see it you're like, oh, this is just how they're going to introduce all the characters, and then it ends with her being naked, and it's like, oh, this has all been a dream, but we can take the information that was just given to us and assume that it's all correct.
Yes, exactly.
And then we just cut out a ton of exposition. We don't need to learn any of these people's names.
Yeah, that's
we got
true.
All this. So I always really like that one. I think that's a really effective dream sequence.
I completely forgot that is a dream sequence.
Yes.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Yeah, beginning, that's a whole nother interesting, like, films that begin with dream sequences.
Yeah.
Are
there any others you could think of?
Off the top of my head.
I feel like there are some.
There's definitely some. And they usually work in a similar way where it's like...
It's an exposition bomb.
Yeah.
In a dream.
Or it could be, like, telling you something about the character. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Like the character's fearful of something, so it comes out in a dream.
I also just really identify with that because I am a person who has recurring dreams.
Okay.
And one of my recurring dreams is that I go to work or school and I've forgotten to put my clothes on.
Yeah, I have that too. I think that's like the most common shit in the world.
That
I get all the common ones.
My me teeth too. Falling teeth out. Falling out. Yeah.
Yeah. I used to, I think, get more like recurring dreams. Not really that much anymore. But I also don't have nightmares anymore. I have like what I call like sad nightmares where it's like... It's not, there's no jump scares anymore. It's just like depressing. Someone I love dies.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, it's like, I guess that's a nightmare.
Yeah.
So my next one is an entire short film. And this is the 1935 Disney animated short called Pluto's Judgment Day.
Oh my goodness.
So Pluto's Judgment Day begins, and this is 35. So this is still Walt Disney voicing Mickey.
Wow.
And it's in color, and it begins with Pluto like chasing a cat and being a dick to a cat. And then Mickey, uncharacteristic of how he would be later on, is really hard on Pluto. And he's like, "You're bad. You're being a very bad dog. And when it's your judgment day, you'll pay for how you treat the cat."
Whoa.
Yeah, he's super, super hardcore.
He's really religious.
Yeah, and I know. And but this is like, I live in a nice, cozy house, Mickey.
Yeah.
Pluto, he says, he tells Pluto to stay, sit and stay. And Pluto falls asleep in front of the fireplace. And then almost like the way they would animate like a ghost leaving your body, like he gets up, but you see like he's transparent and then he's there. So it's like that's a dream. And then a transparent door opens, but the real door is still there. So I guess it's the logic is not. Well, it reads perfectly fine. You totally know this is a dream.
Yeah, yeah.
And a cat comes in and this cat talks like James Cagney. And he's like, "Hey, you, what are you doing? Why don't you come get me, you big tough guy?" And so Pluto chases him, and the cat brings him to, like, a big building that's shaped like a cat. So Pluto runs in, and when he runs in, he immediately is, like, on a slide, and he's, like, sliding down, and he slides in. He's in the center of a room, and he's on this, like, little stand that says Public Enemy Number One. And and then, like, what happens? There's, like, this is also a very musical short too. You hear what do you hear? Oh, you hear, "We want Pluto, we want Pluto," and like these anthropomorphic balls and chains like crawl up to him and like attach themselves to all his limbs, including his tail. And then a jury box pops up and it's all cats. And a judge with like a powdered wig, but that's a cat. And then a guy shows up with like a red robe and he's a cat, and he actually looks a lot like who would be Pete.
Yeah.
Later on.
Well, that's the whole thing is Pete and Goofy don't get along, right? Because Pete's a cat and Goofy's a dog.
I don't know what he officially is anymore. He's been both a cat and a dog in the timeline. He also started off with a peg leg, and then doesn't have one anymore.
Interesting.
But he's like the lawyer, so they're like. As he speaks, everything he says is sort of rhyming. So he's kind of like singing. And he's like, "Let's meet, exhibit number one," or whatever. And it's like, so the first cat is like this big fat cat. And he's like, "He made fun of me because of how fat I am. But then he squashed me and now I'm flat," or whatever. And then the second one, and this is very insensitive. The second one comes out and he's in a wheelchair.
Oh no.
And they're like, "He has dog shock," and he's like shaking. Oh, kind of like what we used to call shell shock from, which was PTSD.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this cat has PTSD from Pluto's fucking bullshit.
From Pluto's big bag of bullshit.
And then I can't even understand what the third thing is, because it's almost like they're like, "You know what we need here is a little bit of racism."
Oh god.
So the third one, there were these like little cats that are singing, and I don't know what they're singing, and then they pull a grave like as if it were on a cart, and on the gravestone it says "Rest in peace, Uncle Remus."
No,
and boy. Then like 10 cats jump out of the grave and they look like angels, but they also have Uncle Remus like faces.
Oh, God.
And have like sticks, like walking sticks that they're like dancing with. And they start singing like "One little, two little, 10 little angel," because they're angels.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, not Uncle Remus, sorry, Uncle Tom. Okay. But they look like Uncle Remus type characters.
Okay.
I don't know why they're Uncle Tom. I don't know what it has to do with cats.
It's really weird.
I don't know. Are they saying cats are black people and dogs are white people? Like, I have a master's degree in cinema studies, and I don't know what the fuck's happening in this. So that, let's move on beyond that. Then there's a gag that I genuinely thought was funny.
where they're like, it's time for the jury to decide, and you see all the cats like marching, and there's a room that says jury room, but there's a revolving door, and they just go in and come out immediately. And then they're like, guilty, guilty. And then I like this because this is early, crazy, unhinged Disney, like stuff you would never see now. They drag him out and they put him in a chair, and he's being held above a fire with like on a rope in the chair. And they're going to like lower the chair into the fire. And then we cut to him and he's sleeping in front of the fireplace, and like an ember of fire like jumps off of the log and onto his tail, and he wakes up and he's like, oh, and he runs in, and Mickey's, I guess the cat is theirs. Mickey's giving the cat a bath, and then he's like, kiss and make up. And then they kiss and make up, and that's the end of the show.
Oh, well, that's cute.
So that's Pluto's Judgment Day from 1935.
Does Peach dream?
That's a great question. Yes, because she'll do like little
Maisie dreams.
She's doing little woofs.
Our little Shih Tzu Maisie. She has bad dreams sometimes.
Yeah, you could see them like.
Yeah, she actually a couple months ago, she was having a dream where like you can like she's asleep, but you hear her like she's either like crying or she's like barking, and she's like clearly agitated. Aww. And then I like went I tapped her and I was like, Maisie, wake up. And she jumped up and like barked at me. But because she must have been like being chased by something her dream.
Well, sometimes you see their little feet move. Yeah, like they're running.
It's so sad. I always wake her up because I don't want her to have a bad dream.
Yeah. Not to sound specious, but I always think about like how, like when she wakes up, right?
How does she know that this is reality?
How does she? Does she just think something changed, or does she? Is she like, oh, that was a dream? You know what I mean? Like how much are they cognizant of? Like,
I don't know. Well, you know, I mean, so little is like actually known for sure. But like, I remember reading that like the average dog, or a dog is said to have the intelligence of an average 2-year-old human. So like a 2-year-old knows the difference between a dream and reality.
That's true. Yeah. See, sometimes like when I take like Peach on an elevator, I think, does she get what's happening, or does she think we're walking into a room, the world changes, and then we're walking out of it?
Have you ever seen all those TikToks of people being like, I've had my dog for 10 years, and I've never told her my name? Yeah. And then they go up to her like, hey, my name's Anthony, by the way.
I saw a great one the other day where it was this woman, and it was like, your dog when you eat? And she's like, oh, what you got there? Oh, what's that, chicken? Oh, wow, I've never tried that. I wonder if it's good. No, no, just I'm just interested. I just wonder if I like it. Yeah, I've never had any. Oh, is that crunchy? Interesting. What does he got?
That's like that. You ever see that clip of that little girl who's like, oh, I wish I could have one, but.
Yeah. It's cute. Wish I could get it. all right. What do you have next?
Okay. I have two more, and then I have a bunch of like honorable mentions.
I have like one honorable mention.
Okay. This one is, I feel like it might be on your list too.
Give it to me.
It is the most obvious one.
Okay.
It is from A Nightmare on Elm Street.
No, I don't have any Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay, I have this one, and I debated not putting this on the list at all because I was like, okay, the whole fucking thing's about dreams, so this feels like a cheat. But
yeah, no, it's not a cheat.
It is specifically, I think, the best nightmare sequence in the film, and it's the one where Nancy falls asleep in class.
Yeah.
And then looks out into the hallway and sees
the body bag.
The body bag with her friend in it being dragged by no one down the hallway. And then she gets up to follow it. And then she sees like a student asking for her hall pass. And then when she turns around, the student's wearing Freddy's sweater.
Yeah.
And is like, I said, where's your hall pass? And has the glove. But then she just like, it's very dream logic-y because then she just like keeps walking away from her. Right. And then at one point she's walking down a hallway and there are leaves blowing in the hallway, which is
so great.
So cool and like an arresting image. And then eventually that body bag leads her down to the boiler room. And then she gets into... that's when she discovers that she can wake herself up because she forces her arm onto the hot boiler and it wakes her up.
Right.
So others would say that they like the opening dream sequence.
See, I was thinking about
That one.
And that's another goat. That's a movie that opens with a dream sequence.
Yes,
that's,
it is.
The first scene is that dream. But I just think that the one of Nancy, the one I just described, is to me the creepiest and just like the scariest.
That's a good one. I thought too about, I couldn't decide which one I wanted to do. I knew it would definitely be from the first film because I think it has the best nightmares. The one that I was thinking about was not the one you were, but the one kind of later on where she like goes and she sees the friend die, which is interesting because something's happening in reality that she's seeing.
Yeah.
But she's still dreaming. And that's the one that does that really interesting thing where she's like outside of her house and like in the bushes and then she's in bed and it like zooms in, but like,
oh,
they actually gave her the trellis and
she
then
pushes
some,
the trellis off of her, yeah, and then it's
some,
gone.
Some crew member, like, I didn't even notice that until it was pointed out. Like, I was like, that's so brilliant, like the way it bleeds through. Yeah, so that's really, yeah. No, I think the one you, it's definitely like one of just the shot of the body being dragged and leaving like the trail of blood.
And the fact that
so
the friend, what's the friend's name? I can't think of what it is. I don't know.
Tina?
Tina. Tina's in the body bag, but is like alive.
Yeah.
Ish. Like talking.
Wait, doesn't she also have like bugs coming out of her mouth or something?
At one point she opens up her mouth and goes, like yawns, yeah, yeah, and like a bunch of bugs come out. But she goes like, Nancy, Nancy, yeah, help me. It's so scary. Yeah, yeah. And then at one point I think in that same sequence you see the little girl with the jump rope too.
Yeah.
Who is like a motif of all of those nightmares.
Hey, you know, we did a whole episode of Nightmare on Elm Street a couple years back. So
you
should definitely go and check
that. Did we do
that?
The two of us?
I don't remember. Was it you and I?
I don't know. We're getting to the point where I truly don't remember some episodes we've done.
I think it... no, it was me and Peter Marsh.
Okay.
But you did something.
I remember recently saying to you, like, hey, we should do a podcast about this. And you being like, we've done that.
Yeah, that does happen. That happens to me too.
Yeah.
All right. So my next one is not a scary one. This is from the 1974 film The Conversation, which is a Francis Ford Coppola movie starring the great Gene Hackman. Have you ever seen this film?
I have. I thought you were going to say the great Cindy Williams. Shirley of Laverne and Shirley.
She is great in this. So if you don't know that movie, Gene Hackman plays a audio technician who like will, he's like the best in the business and people pay him to like spy on spy on people basically. And he gets a lot of money for it. And he gets like a job from someone called the director, so he doesn't really know who it is. And the person's like, these two people are meeting in a public park because they want to have a conversation without being heard. But I know you can like, I want you to, you know, tell me what it is. So he does that. And that's the conversation, which you hear a million times in the movie. And they're like talking about like being killed. Like there's fear in them of like the woman's gonna be killed. So he starts to like feel guilty, and we also find out in his backstory that like three people died for some other job that he did that he's holding that guilt. But what's interesting is the character is very taciturn and doesn't say a lot. He says more like in this dream scene than he does when the character's awake. So we see he's sleeping, and then we see the footage of the actual conversation, but it's like this squeaky electronic like really like the pitch turned all the way up sound. So you see them lips moving, but they're like, all right. And then it's like a misty like park or whatever, and there's a woman walking, he's walking after her, and she's like looks scared and she's kind of running away from him, and she goes up like a little flight of stairs, but she's like on a hill and he's on the bottom, and then he's sort of walking with her, and it's like, hey miss, please. You know, and he starts like talking to her, and he says, there's also the cuts between his images and her images are very soft dissolves, which is always interesting, because the dissolves typically read as a time jump. So when you do it in a scene where there would just be a normal cut, it just feels very dreamy. Yeah. It's also very misty and like blue looking. And, He's like, there isn't much to say about me. I was very sick when I was a boy. I was paralyzed in my left arm and my left leg. I couldn't walk for 6 months. One doctor said I'd probably never walk again. And like, she's just like walking, not saying anything. And he's like trying to connect with her, but he's just saying stuff about himself. He talks about
his mother was giving him a bath and the doorbell rang and he slipped into the bath. And he thought he was going to die because this is when he was paralyzed. And then he woke up feeling oily because his mother was putting holy oil on him or whatever. And he's like, I remember being disappointed that I survived. And it's just like, from a character like is super guarded, it's so interesting in the context of the movie. When I was 5, my father introduced me to a friend of his, and for no reason at all, I hit him right in the stomach with all my strength. He died a year later, which is such like a little kid thing that you carry your whole life for no reason. And then he says, he'll kill you if he gets the chance, which is something that she says in the conversation that he records. And it's the line he keeps listening to over and over again when he's feeling guilty. He'll kill you if he gets the chance. Or he'll kill us if he gets the chance. It's such a good movie. It's really good.
That sounds great.
Gene Hackman, everybody.
Gene Hackman, what a king.
He was fucking great. He did it all. Comedy and drama.
Now I'm sad because I'm thinking about the way Gene Hackman passed.
Yeah, it was a weird way
to go. Oh boy, it was really bad.
Yeah.
All right. Well, on that note. Okay, so mine. So I have Eternal Sunshine. And then I have a bunch of like
of the Spotless Minds.
Yeah, and you know, I didn't even really now I feel like it shouldn't count because I didn't even think about it as not really being a dream until you said earlier, like, it's not really a dream because it's just going through his memories.
That's fine.
But it to me, it still reads a dream because A, it's dream logic.
They're in his subconscious.
And he's lying on a bed unconscious while it's all happening in his head.
Right, so you're
He's like sleeping.
Yeah, basically is a dream.
And basically everything that we see in his head, it's a recollection of memories, but with dream logic.
Right. Through his adult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I included this on my list because I think that even though it's not technically like a traditional dream.
It's fine.
I remember.
My last one's, you could very much argue, is not a dream at all.
Okay. I remember when we went to see this movie feeling like moved.
Yeah.
Like, because it was the closest thing I've ever seen on film to what dreams look and feel like.
I agree.
And being like moved and also like astounded, like, wow, they did it.
I still feel
like I've seen other things that are supposed to depict dreams and none of them feel quite right. And they, by gosh, they fucking did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
This feels like a dream.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Even just the fact that like objects transform into other objects at times.
Right.
Randomly. There's a part where he's in a house and then like there's water in the house.
Yeah.
Like it's like by the shore and you hear the tide coming in and out. And, like, you look down and he's in the water in his house. And there's another time where he's like being carted away and he's like buried up to his neck in sand.
Yeah.
For no reason.
He walks down a block and it loops.
Yeah.
Like it's like the same at the one end of the block as the other.
What about the eyebrows? Like of characters are like, there's the eyebrows are like underneath their eyes instead of on top of their eyes. Just like weird fucking images.
Like books with no
words
on them. Yeah.
Like the part where he's under the table and he's crying and then he's an adult. All of a sudden. And like, that's the thing about dreams is like, you're both in dreams and it's in this movie too. Like, when you're in them, it all feels like it makes sense.
Yes, right, right,
but, but it's you're multiple people at the same time. You're in multiple different settings at the same time.
Right.
Things can just suddenly change for no reason, and it all seems to be fine, like real.
You could go from lucid to not lucid.
Yeah, yeah. And like I've had dreams, I'm sure you have too, where like different times of your life are combined.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm a teacher. I've had dreams where like I'm a teacher, but I'm in my high school and I'm still somehow a student, but also I work there.
Right, right, right.
And like weird mixes of memories.
Right.
And it just captures it so well.
Yeah.
And it's also sad because they are trying to escape the erasing of all of his memories of their relationship.
Right, 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 right.
I just think that's just such a great movie in general. Yeah. And the thing, one of the things that makes it so great is the dream portion of it.
You know, I've only ever seen it twice.
Really?
And the first time I saw it, I was like going through a little breakup.
Oh, no. And we saw it together, didn't we?
I think we did.
Yeah.
And I remember
You're like, this is my life.
No.
I don't want to erase these memories of her.
No.
I remember saying, was Joe Montanino with us?
I don't remember
that. I remember being Joe Montanino being with us and him being like, this is too much. I want to walk out. And I was like,
really?
I was like, can you dislike a movie for being too good? I remember thinking that, like, they're like, this is not a good movie. It's too good.
That movie did give birth to the cliche of memories of your partner being under a sheet in bed.
Yeah.
Like, that came from, I feel like, Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah. It almost it's become such a thing. It's like, it's sort of crushed on the weight of its own.
Yeah.
It almost doesn't stand on its own.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if you're doing a movie now where you want to see this kid is deep, like, he's got an Eternal Sunshine poster.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, my last one is Mulholland Drive.
Well, okay. I've seen Mulholland Drive one time, and I remember being like, I'll be darned if I know what the fuck is going
on. Yeah, it's very confusing.
And feeling like, is this entire thing a dream?
It could be.
Yeah, so...
Right, it's a David Lynch movie, so it is and it isn't, and it doesn't matter.
Right.
It is a dream.
It is both and neither.
It's a movie and not a dream, and a movie, or a movie that knows it's a movie, or a dream of a movie. You know, there's a scene where, I think I talked about this on a different pod. Oh, no, I talked about this when I was talking about Vanilla Sky with Peter.
I didn't even think of Vanilla Sky.
Yeah, but there's nothing good in there.
Yeah.
There's a scene.
One good thing that Vanilla Sky does is the images that are vaguely familiar, and then at the end you realize that they're like pop culture things.
Yeah, yeah. There's a scene, this isn't the scene I'm talking about, but there's a great scene in Mulholland Drive where, like, she's an actress and she's like auditioning, and it's like a scene where she's auditioning with this guy, and they're supposed to like be having like
Liz Kim Basinger.
Oh no, it's what's her name? Oh my goodness gracious me. What is her?
Why did I think it was Kim Basinger?
Because you see all blonde women in the scene.
You're right. You know what? You're right.
You were a fucking...
I guess Kim Basinger. No, I was going to say she would have been too old. Naomi Watts. Point, but no. Oh, okay.
She would have been too old. I mean, no, she would have been, but she wouldn't have been in this movie.
Okay.
Naomi Watts. Anyway, she's talking to this guy and they're doing the scene, but like the scene gets real and it's, and like people read that moment as like, even though they're pretending in the context, maybe they're actually bleeding into reality. Anyway, Lynch is really obsessed with things like this. Like the end of Twin Peaks: The Return, they go to Laura Palmer's house and like someone opens the door and he cast the actual person that lived in Laura Palmer's house now. And Lynch was like, no, this scene's actually in the real world because she's the real person. This is the real, like, anyway.
What a weird guy.
God bless him. He's moved on. All right, so the scene...
He's dead?
Yeah, he just died.
Oh.
Where were you?
When did he die?
I think in January. No, in like December or something.
Oh, so recently.
Yeah, okay, very recently, yeah. There's a scene in a diner where we see two characters sitting and talking. And this is a typical David Lynch... We haven't met these guys before, so you're like, what are we doing? This is totally new. And there's two guys sitting, and it's not a diner, it's like a, it's a Winkies. I don't know if that's a real thing or not, but it's kind of like a chain diner. And two guys, they're both dressed like kind of nice, like one's in a suit, one's in like just a nice shirt and a jacket, because it's a David Lynch movie and men dress up. Because it's like also always the 50s, but not. So they're just sitting there, and one guy's like, so why did you invite me to lunch here? And he's, and then the other, the sort of main character of the scene is like, well, you know, it's kind of silly, but I actually had a dream about this place. I actually had two dreams about it. And he's like, really? And he's like, yeah. And we were in this place and you were standing over there. And then he looks and the camera pans and he's not there, but you, the audience, are like, oh, he's going to be there, but he's not. Uh-huh. And then he starts to describe a dream. And he's like, so I'm sitting here and you're sitting here and I'm so scared. I don't even know why. I'm just so terrified. And you're really scared too. And that's making me more scared. And I could see through this building, behind this building is the scariest face I've ever seen. I never want to see that face ever in the real world. And he's like, so this is why you invited me here? And he's like, yeah, you know, and he's kind of like laughing a little bit. And he's like, it's silly, right? And he's like, well, we're here. We might as well go see. And then that guy gets up to go pay the bill, but he's then standing where he was in the dream. Oh, the camera pans and he's there. And then the main guy clocks it. And in an almost funny thing, he has a fuck moment where he's like, oh, no. So then they go outside and they're just slowly walking down. And we see like the main guy sweating and they kind of like walk down like a little like steps. And there's like a little like dumpster area and they're getting closer and closer. And you see a shot of like the corner of the building. So it's like a. Basically, such an anxiety-inducing shot because it is there's no figure in it. It's just the corner of the building, and so that's like a vertical line cutting down, dissecting down the middle of the frame. And but you just know something's got to be there. So the guy walks up to it, and then like just very like casually, this is also a jump scare. Very casually, like this, like. Monster looking character comes out, but they're not there. People call it the dumpster monster, but it as monstrous as it looks, and it looks like a witch kind of, it also could just be they're dirty and haven't washed.
Okay,
so it's one of those things where it's like there's like it's a monster that could exist in some way.
Okay,
and then the guy faints and then his friend tries to help him up and that's the end of the scene.
Oh, I just googled it.
And that scene's kind of not related to anything else. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's scary.
And it's just so... So, is it a dream? Is it not a dream? Is the whole movie a dream? Why is this one little... This one little scene's like its own short story or its own short film.
It just looks... It looks like a someone who has just been burned, maybe?
Yeah. It could be... It's... Mulholland Drive... People don't realize he has a cinematic universe. So, Mulholland Drive is in the same universe as... Twin Peaks.
Okay.
And there are characters that look like that in Twin Peaks too. I think they're called the end. Are they? No, that's Eraserhead. I don't remember what they're called.
Aren't there dreams in Eraserhead too?
Kind of. Yeah, I guess, because he does fall asleep and stuff. But, you know, it's a fucking David Lynch movie. But I just think it's so interesting to be a dream that he's describing a dream. He's like, let me tell you about my dream, but he's actually enacting it as he's saying it.
Yeah.
And also, it's using this how dreams are cinematic because in a movie you just are somewhere and you get that feeling like even at the beginning of the scene like the two guys are just sitting there and it, you get the feeling like they are just as like newly here as we the viewer are.
Like how did we get here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just like it's also I think a masterclass in horror, right? Even though it's not really a horror movie because it tells you very clearly what's about to happen. It telegraphs exactly what's going to happen, yet it's still effective.
Yeah.
Huh. He goes, we're going to go out there and there's going to be a scary face. Yeah. And then that happens exactly with no twists or turns, but it still scares the shit out of you.
Yeah.
Recently, John Mulaney had a live talk show on Netflix. It was really good. And he would have ridiculous things. Like, it's very early Conan. And he was like, I don't know if you guys know, in the audience tonight, we've got the dumpster monster from Mulholland Drive. And it's just someone looking like that, like sitting in the front row clapping. And he's like, thanks, dumpster monster. Yeah, that's my last one.
All right, that's great. What are your honorable mentions?
Oh, Ray Stantz getting a blowjob from a ghost in Ghostbusters.
That's a dream?
Yes. It's a dream that he has.
Hmm.
Does that make it worse? It's a weird one. It was filmed as a scene that happened, but then...
As part of my sexual awakening.
I know, but then they put it in a montage. Yeah, because you see him then like bed and then he falls out of bed.
Okay.
So they turned it into a dream.
Any others?
No, that's it. I mean, a lot of the things from The Sopranos. There's that whole episode where he like thinks he's another guy.
Yeah, oh, that's a great one. Kevin.
Yeah.
God, that's a good episode.
Mm-hmm.
And there are hints throughout that it's a dream.
Yeah.
Right? Like, when he's in his hotel room, like, he hears his family talking on the other side of the wall.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have a few honorable mentions that I just didn't know where to put them. This one is just like a typical jump scare. There's not much to say about it, but I just think it was an effective jump scare, and it's the Friday the 13th ending.
Yes, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Jason's popping out of the water.
Yeah.
Another quick one, the Damien's dream in The Exorcist. of his mother getting lost in on a crowded street.
Yeah, I forgot about that one.
And it's just him, but it's intercut with, I think, do you see the face of the demon too?
Probably. Or that was added in the 90s version.
But it's just, I think it's just like a great representation of what a dream you might have when you feel like you're losing someone.
Yeah.
Because she's losing her sanity.
Yeah.
And it's just, she's walking and she's walking kind of like with a sort of neutral expression on her face. Anyway. Yeah. And she's going to get lost because she doesn't know where she's going and he's running after her and then she's lost in the crowd. Yeah. And he can't do anything.
Yeah.
And then the other one, so these two are a little bit more substantive. The very elaborate dream sequence in Romy and Michelle's high school reunion.
Don't remember that at all. What? I might not have actually seen that entire film.
Well, it's Pride, so you better
go. I'm so sorry, everybody.
Romy and Michelle's high school reunion has like legitimately like a 15-minute to 20-minute dream sequence.
Really?
That could be read as just an alternate version of the movie.
Okay.
Where they're on their way to their high school reunion, and then Michelle... It transitions into a dream without you knowing it's transitioning into a dream. Uh-huh. Where they get to the reunion, they see the people from high school, and like a bunch of stuff happens that's like now all of a sudden they're popular and the people who bullied them in high school like them.
Uh-huh.
And they get like whisked away from each other because they just had a fight. Earlier, like it's the main conflict between them, and then like you see one group is taking Romy away, the other group is taking Michelle away, and they look back at each other as they're being pulled away from each other. You get the sense that like their friendship is now over because they've gotten what they wanted, which is to be accepted by the popular kids, but they will only accept them in two separate groups where they're not together anymore. And then it flashes forward in time to the future, and it's Romy is on her deathbed, and Michelle calls her on like video phone because it's like 90s version of the future, and it's like, it's been 30 years, like I wanted to talk to you, you know, like we haven't seen each other, like whatever. And then they start fighting again about who's the Mary and who's the Rhoda, which is part of their original fight, which is who's cuter.
And then it
gets so absurd that you're like, this has to be a dream, but it's been going on for a very long time.
It's a big chunk of the film.
It's like that like Broadway thing in Singing in the Rain where you're like, this is still going. That dance montage.
Yeah,
yeah. And then it ends with Michelle, which is Lisa Kudrow's character, waking up, and then they're outside the actual reunion. But what's weird is then she goes inside the reunion and everything inside the reunion looks exactly as it did in her dream, but the characters are not the same. The characters that they remember from high school are different than she imagined them in her dream.
The same actors.
Okay. Yeah. It's a weird, it doesn't even really serve. I guess the purpose that it serves is like, she has this dream that like, what if we never make up and I lose my best friend? But it's weird. So that's an interesting one.
That's interesting.
And then the other one, the last one I have is, and this is just one that is tied to a memory of like, you know, when you were a kid and you saw a movie and then you were like, oh, like it's a movie. It's going to be good because it's a movie.
Right.
Especially a movie that you wanted to see. And like, as you got older, you started realizing like, oh, like this movie might not be good.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the Sydney's dream from Scream 3.
Oh, yeah.
Of her mom.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, I was in, like, eighth grade watching it in the theater, and it was during this dream that I had the thought, like, this movie might be a piece of shit. Even though I really wanted to see it, and I really want to like it.
Yeah.
I feel like this is bad.
Yeah.
And it is bad. It's a bad movie, and that scene is really bad.
It's such a cheap scare. It's
such a cheap scare. And they had never done anything like that.
I know. Before, it's so out of character.
It's
for
so
it.
for the series.
Yeah.
Like no other character has ever had a dream like that. That's been depicted.
Yeah, it's
in
way
that
out of character.
Because so for it's the film. It's she hears her mother calling like Sydney, and she looks out a window. And she sees her dead mother there, and then and then she turns into Ghostface. It's really shitty.
Yeah, it's super shitty.
So that's my last honorable mention.
Nice. I thought about maybe Rey's vision from the not The Force Awakens, from Last Jedi, where she like sees a bunch of versions of herself.
Oh yeah.
But that was also like, then that made me think of Luke's vision where he like cuts off Darth Vader's face and it's his face.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, is that a dream? Because that's like a Force illusion or whatever the fuck.
Very few of these are actually people just being asleep and then waking up. I mean, Romy and Michelle is, but yeah. The other ones, there's either drugs involved or there's some other aspect that's introduced.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, the more you think, the more I was thinking about it, the less stable the idea was.
And I'm sure that once we finish this episode, I'm going to think of like five more.
Yeah, that's always how it goes.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a dream talking to you, Anthony.
Or has it been a nightmare?
No, this has been a really fun episode. Yeah, guys, fucking jump. Hey, every episode of PCMC is on YouTube now. So that's another place for you to listen to us. So jump in our fucking comments and tell us your favorite.
Oh, God. Be nice, please.
Yeah. I'm Mike Maggiorno. I was joined today by Anthony Maggiorno. Anthony, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.